Okay, for the purpose of critique, education, and review.
It's the Nerdlings Podcast. I'm WC Chronicles, your senior nerdling.
And I'm a junior in life, so ready to roll, baby.
Getting distracted by shiny squirrels.
Ready to roll.
Okay, so to start out the Nerd Podcast, I want to play what I think is going to be the next big hit Christmas song. But it has potential. Okay.
Is it like Grandma Got Run Over Like a Reindeer?
It is right in the same vein of gold and silver, like when Grandma got run over by a reindeer. I heard this song. I got to give the kudos to where it's from. I heard it on the Tim Conway Jr. show on KFI out of Los Angeles. He played it on their radio station. Okay. It's by a guy, I believe his name is Douglas Messina. I've actually reached out to him to get him on our podcast, but let's play the track. Here it is, Road Rage Santa.
Did you ever wonder what Santa Claus does to relax after all that hard work at his North Pole workshop? Well, it's not widely known, but he has a vacation house down south. Way down south at the South Pole. That's right, he's bipolar. Anyway, one year right after Christmas, Mrs. Claus was already waiting at the vacation house, and Santa and his chief elf, Guido, were flying in the sleigh heading south to meet her, when suddenly a strong gust of wind blew them into the side of a tall building. No one was hurt, but the sleigh was damaged and needed repair. It would take a couple of days to fix, so Santa decided to rent a car and run some errands. Because he's usually flying over the traffic, he never realized how stressful driving can be. Out when you're out for a drive, cause that bearded old guy ain't taking no jive. Road rage Santa's driving through town. He's making a fist, he's shaking it twice, shouting out things that aren't very nice. Road rage Santa's driving through town. His horn he's always beeping, he hates to use his brakes. He hates it when you cut him off. It's by mistake. If you tie up the roads while out for some fun, the elf at his side is packing a gun. Road rage Santa's driving through town. The pedestrians on the sidewalk had better watch their step. For if they even think to jaywalk, he'll be giving them some lip. Oh, the traffic and crowds have made him this way. It's too bad repairs are being down to his sleigh. Road rage Santa's driving, and you may need reviving. When road rage Santa cuts driving through town. Ah, da 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 da. What a horrible sound.
Road Rage Santa. I tell you, I mean, get rid of the little beginning. I know you got the tagline at the beginning, him talking his explanation, but hey, that's got to be the new, that's got to be the Christmas song for 2017.
That sounds like Santa, get out of his way. No sleigh, no lay in the South Pole, Santa's pissed. So, I love that.
Isn't that a good one?
Yes.
So it's on YouTube. Do the Road Rage Santa. It's a little animated cartoon. Doug Messina, hey, I emailed you. I left you a comment. You need to come on our podcast. We need to talk to you about this song.
Yes, we do. We got to find out where you got the inspiration to write this, because that's pretty good. Road Rage Santa.
Brings us to another podcast we did a few weeks ago. We were reviewing U2's new song, Get Out of Your Own Way. Came across what we thought was a demo, like a bootleg leak demo of Bono and Edge just playing it. Okay, let's play just that. Play a moment of that, just real quick.
Get out your own way.
Okay, so there's a little clip of what we thought, and the reason that I came across that, somebody had taken his audio from this gentleman, Brabox, B-R-A-B-O-X, Brabox, and took his audio and made another video out of it. And then I saw his comments down, hey, that's my audio. I followed the link, boom, there he was. This guy sounds like Bono more than Bono sounds like Bono.
Exactly. Sounds like a younger version of him just hanging out.
Yeah.
Getting ready for a show or getting ready to sing to his girl or just coming up with something new.
What his song sounded like, it sounded like the real Bono, because when Bono records, he's generally sitting down. You're supposed to be standing up for his lung capacity and so on. But I'm trying to get this guy on the podcast. He did respond back. I want to talk to him. You hear him talk. You said he sounds like he's Italian.
Italian, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Bella, some of the writing. Bella. So yeah. Who knows, but it could be Portuguese. Could be
Croatia.
You don't know what it is.
I have no idea.
His nationality, but I'm going to go with Italian, but who knows?
No idea where he is, but we got to get him. We're
going to get you on here.
Gonna try to get him on the podcast.
For all we know, he could be in Pablo Escobar's. He does remind you a little Colombian because. Pablo Escobar.
Yeah, a little South American flair there, you know. So anyway, we were fooled. We're coming up clean. Honesty about it. What we thought was a leaked demo from YouTube, it's actually this guy, Brabox. He has a whole YouTube channel where he does a whole lot of other U2 songs, and he sounds like him. My God.
Yes, 100%. And he kind of looks like a younger version of like that schmoozing, charming characteristic that can just come in and just pull this off. That's why you think it's Bono.
He's got some confidence there. That's kind of cool to do. Okay, so shall we get to the Mabel's Doomsday Vault and Archives update?
Yes. Did she update something new?
Oh, we got a great story for tonight. So let's hit the music. She's a pop killer as a gal can be. A household name in every family. But the one she wants so bad ain't the guy who yells like man. Hey, I'm your host, Smartass B. Hush.
I think I'm Tofu Stick Cucumber or something. I don't even
tofu
know.
Tofu Scramble.
Tofu Scramble Eggs, Cucumbers, it's all the same.
It's all the same place, or eventually.
Yeah.
Okay, so tonight's story from Mabel's Doomsday Vault is one that I just relearned about, that I forgot about. And it's funny how this came about, okay? So my dad sends me an email and a video from the local news station, KGW, in Portland, Oregon, about a guy that he used to work with named Bob. And this guy restored an old police car, I think it was. And I watched just a short news article.
Was that one of the old black and white ones like they had in the Blues Brothers, or was like a more modern one?
Like 1940s. 1930s.
Oh, so he actually had the siren on top.
A very old. So I asked my dad, I go, so this guy, the guy he used to work with at IBM for like 30 years, was a guy named Bob. And so I asked my dad, I go, do you still talk to Bob? Do you still know Bob? And I'm going to read this kind of verbatim from the email. It says, yeah, but we don't have much in common other than IBM. He's too hung up on his own limited topics and always wants to control the conversation. He's dedicated to Navy vets, vacuum tubes, radio repair, school board reform, and especially his volunteer job at the down at OMSI. That's the big museum on the submarine. But he does keep busy. So anyway, he goes on to tell me in the video that if you watch it, because it's at the Portland Police Bureau Museum.
Oh, nice!
Where they have a whole bunch of things on display throughout the history of the Portland Police Bureau. And he tells me you stop it in one spot, and in the back, near some cabinets, just to go on to the right side, there is a desk. And this was the St. John's Portland Police Bureau Precinct desk that they had back in the 50s and 60s. Okay.
I wonder if it was made of like solid oak, one of those nice big ones you see in the movies.
It was one of those nice desks that folds down that has the lock on it and everything. But anyway, we had that at our house for about 10 years.
Wow.
Through more better part of the late 70s and mid early 80s. And my great great grandma, her name's Mabel Drake, she used to date the police officer, a guy named Frank Irving, who was the police chief.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if it was for the whole Portland Police Department or
county
St. John's
yeah.
Precinct. But anyway, after was my mom took it, and they had it for about 10 years. My mom and my dad took it, and they donated it to the museum, which they discovered that after they opened it, after a year or two later, they couldn't get the lock open. Huh. Okay? So this is after they donated it. About a year or two later, they received a phone call from the police station wanting to know if my mom still had the key. Okay? My mom says, no, we don't have the key. Just use a hairpin. Okay? Hairpin, those little things that ladies, the older ladies put in their hair. They explained, well, we've tried and we failed. And they called again. Okay? So my mom and dad, my dad took my mom down to the police station. The police chief, I don't know whoever was down there in charge at the time, said, we've had some of our best locksmiths, and they can't get this open.
Just ask a thief, a burglar. They'll get it open.
Well, they couldn't open. It was just a simple desk. So my mom took out a bobby pin, and she taught the police department how to break into their own desk.
There you go. There you go. They should have listened to her in the first place. They wouldn't have that problem.
Well, I mean, my thing is, here it is. I mean, this is a big metropolitan police department. Access to the best technology at the times and the best, some of the best people in the metro of any large million city, tri-county area. And none of them could get it open. So they had to call my mom with a bobby pin to go down, open it, and then show their best locksmith how to open it.
Wow. Portland, Oregon. What an interesting story.
So I thought we should give Mabel a call and get her side of this story. Shall we do that?
Hello?
Hey, this is Smartass B. Hush, and I'm here with Tofu Scramble, and we got on the phone Mabel, the archive keeper, the vendetta gorilla owner of Mabel's Doomsday Vault and Archives.
The ripper out of, what do you call that? What did she rip out of the ground with you? No.
No, the water pump.
The water pump? Wow.
Mabel, how are you?
Oh, my God. I'm fine with all the, I really have it.
Well, we were just—I was just summarizing the story to Jersey Mike or Tofu Scramble about the time you had to go down and help the police department open the museum piece desk that you owned for about 10 years. You want to give your side of the story?
Yes, please. We really like to hear this.
I knew the guy. He was the sheriff of Portland. Of course, he came deputy sheriff, or where you want to call him, before I was even
dating?
Born. Our family.
Are you dating?
My great-grandmother.
Oh, your great-grandmother. Grandma Mabel Drake. Yeah. Okay, I was dating. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Not me. My grandmother.
Okay. That's how she heard of the desk. He got handed down.
Yeah, he was a friend of the family for many years, and when he passed on, I asked my grandmother if I could have the desk, and she said yes. And we won't go in detail about the desk, but anyway, I had it for many, many years, and I think I got it when Wayne was not two. And it was locked when I got it, but I fooled around with it with a bobby pin, and I got it unlocked. So Danny said, okay, we'll fix it. And for some reason, I don't know whether something came up, it was in the newspaper on the news, the police department here was wanting to get antiques at one of the people. Was in the police department many years ago, and I thought, well, I'm not using that desk no more. Just some story, trying to donate it.
A nice museum piece for their museum they were putting together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We took you boys down there when it was picked up. It was picked up by, looks like a police pickup, what I'm trying to remember back. It was back in the 70s. And the guy closed the desk, and I said, you shouldn't have done that. You just locked it. He says, no big deal. We got a locksmith down there, and he can unlock anything. I said, oh, good.
Now, what year was this What year was this about that you were donating it?
About 75.
75, okay.
You were in first grade.
Okay.
I wasn't even born yet.
Oh, boy.
All right, go on.
It was a twinkle in Daddy's eye. Anyway, they called me the next day and they said, do you have a key to this? And I said, no, but I told your driver that it picked it up, not to close it. I had a thing fixed on it so it wouldn't lock. And he says, well, how do you unlock it? And I said, with a bobby pin. He says, a bobby pin? I said, well, you got a locksmith there, can unlock anything. And he says, well, we'll see what we can do. About a week went by or so, and they called me back. And they wanted to know if we could come down and take a look at it. Be sure everything is that. I thought, uh-huh. So I don't know if you guys remember the long bobby pins women used to wear in their hair when they wore their hair up.
Yes.
What, like the beehive look and all yes. different kinds of looks like that? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Long, skinny bobby pin. And that's what I always use. And I says, well, I'll bring my bobby pin and I'll unlock it for you. And the guy kind of chuckled. And I thought, you smart blank blank. Anyway, I got down there and we took the three kids with us so they could see the police department. Big deal for them anyway it was. And I walked in there and I looked at it and I told them they didn't have the shop up there right. I fixed things for them and I took my bobby pin out and I wiggled a thing and it popped open. I raised it up and I said, there you go. And he says, how could you do that? I said, well, you just stick it in there and twist it. And then I turned around and I said, here, you keep this in case you need to use it again. I gave him my bobby pin. And that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Wow. So, I mean, here it is. I mean, this was about, what, 1980s or mid-80s or so? 70s, okay. High-tech police, Metropolitan Police Department, with the best of everything of the times, and their best man could not open it, and you go down and open it with a bobby pin.
that's just well, those, what do you call that, out of like the 70s, 60s, just twist the skeleton key.
The skeleton key.
Yeah, she had her own skeleton key out of her bobby pin. Wow, out of her hair. is that where you got the idea to yank the pump out with the chain?
Well, thank you for joining us on the podcast, Mabel, for giving us your side of that story. Yeah.
Yes, have a nice day.
Oh, you're welcome. You too. I'm glad to hear you're back.
Thank you. Yeah. It's everybody's starting to get a little, how do you say it like that? Either the weather changed.
Stir crazy.
Stir crazy. Everybody a little sick.
At least I didn't well, catch you too have fun.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Mabel. Thank you
Bye,
so
Mabel.
Much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. It's good to get her side of the
yes,
story.
Yes, it is.
Oh boy, it's not popular. And the gal can be.
Did you say popular?
I did.
Is he popular with me?
Why even Santa boys feel gay as they shout, "Angles away!"
Hey, Mabel, away from me.
All right, gets us to our topic of this week's Nerdlings podcast, which you
is your which road I'm, trip.
My road trip, and you kind of dubbed it rocks, aliens, and desert life.
Yes, because you know what's amazing with that is because we live in a valley, but once you get outside of the man-created mm-hmm. oasis or yeah. mirage they call Vegas, what is left? Nothing but
desert,
rocks.
Alien, Area 51.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
It is amazing. So.
What our culture diversification is outside in the desert. When you go through Summerlin, Henderson, once you get out of the outskirts, there's nothing but desert, rocks, and road.
Because Las Vegas is located where the highways, there's like six different highways majorly going out. There's just not north, south, east, and west. For some reason, there is a north. Let's map this out, okay? You can go south to Los Angeles. You go over a little bit more, you can go south to Nelson. A little bit more, you kind of start heading a little more south, southeast. You're heading towards Henderson, but then you next thing you know, you're heading towards Boulder Dam and Lake Mead. You go a little bit farther over.
Utah
and Valley of Fire, State Fire Park. A little bit more, you're heading over. You're heading towards the Northwest part, Reno.
Yeah.
You know? And then you go over just a little bit more, you're heading to Pahrump.
So basically, we are a city of roads to come in and go out fast. So it's like a 3 to 4 day excursion come in, do their, like I like to call it, their dirty laundry, you know, bachelorette parties, divorce party, convention, whatever, your Vegas mind escape, and then people go.
It's all there. So I decided I wanted to go back to Tonopah again, see the silver mine, and I took 3 days, 2 nights, and did that.
And that must have been a very desert thrilling experience.
It was an amazing experience because I wanted to. I'm a history nerd when it comes to all this cool stuff. So, went back to the 1907 silver mine. This is a 110 acre property of all these old silver mines. They still have the booms up, but there's no silver mining going on, okay? But the neat thing was I spent about 4 hours exploring the place again. But when I first got there, it's what's called, they call it the Queen Mizpah mine, I believe. So you got these tailings rocks. These are the rocks that are left over they've brought out of the ground, okay? Pile of rocks that it's 117 years old. I decided, you know, I wanted some quartz for my rock collection. So I started going over, finding a good-sized chunk rocks off of this pile, take it down, take another big rock, bam, hit it. Bam, smashing rocks is basically what I'm doing.
So instead of smashing pumpkins like the group, you're smashing rocks now.
Smashing rocks, because there could be, my goal is to find a piece of quartz, okay? Well, I get one rock, I smash it open. I am amazed. I find a small vein of silver.
Now, see, that is what I love about hearing this history. Now, putting you in a little bit of an interview mode here now, how does it feel to go out in the middle of the desert and go after our silver, like for our state, you know, the silver state,
right,
Nevada?
Right.
How does it feel to actually have cracking it and actually were in motion?
As you're right. I mean, as growing up as a kid, I collected rocks. Would always see in the museums or the records, not record stores, the rock shops, little bits of silver or something that you'd have to pay for. Well, lo and behold, here it is, 40 years down the road, I finally have obtained my own little piece of silver.
You went out and mined. You motioned to mine.
I
you actually
did.
Were a 49er for the day. How does that feel to be an actual 49er?
It was actually being a 49er because in the mind, thinking about these rocks, this pile, I mean, we're talking huge rocks, the size of a building that have been sitting there since 1907, and it's just sitting there waiting for me to come along and crack it open.
And you cracked it open, and what was one of your discoveries besides the awesome vein of silver?
Real quick, I lost interest in the quartz.
I was going to say, yeah, because this is actual mining that has gone on for decades and still is going on in Nevada. That you left a mine that I guess they say is abandoned, but you actually went there and found something that people, doesn't matter if it's worth a lot of money, it's the challenge, the dream. The creativity, you went out and did it.
It's the fact that I wanted it, I got it, it's mine now. And I did this for about an hour and a half. And I actually got some other rocks where I found little flecks of gold. You know how, okay, you look at a marking pen and there's that tiny little hole where the pen comes out. Tiny little flecks in one rock where there's some gold flecks in it.
Now, is that real gold or what they know as a fool's gold?
Pyrite. I don't believe it's pyrite. I believe it's real gold.
So you might actually be onto something here now. You're not going to get rich.
No, you're not going to get rich.
By far. But it's the experience of like a treasure hunting, going out where people are going to seek aliens. You're going out to seek what's in the ground.
Exactly.
Which is minerals.
And it was so cool. I mean, so we're going to show the rocks in a video on Instagram and a YouTube video. I brought back a rock. It's probably about the size of it. Make a fist. Cut the fist in half. It's a small rock that's got a little flecks of gold. We're going to crack it open and see what's in it eventually.
Let's get this going. Let's just get this out.
In about a week in daylight, we will do it. Bring the hammer, wrap it up, bust it open. See what we got.
I just want to see what the flakes look like. Can we get it out to show us?
In the video.
Okay, in the video.
It's a podcast. They can't see it.
Well, I can't wait to get my hands on a piece of gold because it's like there's another show on Curse of Oak Island where they're searching for the treasure of all the last Incas, you know, the all the scrolls from Christ's time, everything. So you, in a way, have become an entrepreneur / quote-unquote treasure hunter because in the past you also went diamond hunting before.
Went diamond hunting in Arkansas.
And now you're gold mining.
Silver mining. You know, so
have you thought about bringing you know, like a metal detector, camping out type of thing, maybe saying, hey.
I'm not into metal detectors.
Gotcha.
But I'm here. Well, next part of the trip, okay? Because I did so much, okay? There is the old 1907 hotel there called the Mizpah Hotel. Once you get inside, it is still the decor, the architecture, the inside still looks like it's 1907.
Do they still have the saloon girls there and stuff?
They don't have the saloon girls, but they have the saloon.
Oh, wow.
Okay? But here's the thing. I don't know what the story is behind it. You head in, you start going down. There's two restaurants in there. Back restaurant in the back, but the hallway leading down to the restaurant and then into the restroom area, there are these signed checks from celebrities. Now, We're talking.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Carol Burnett, Esther Roll, Jamie Lee Curtis. At first thought, I thought it was, oh, these are celebrities who stayed here at the hotel. No, they didn't, because their checks that are canceled with their pictures. These are all up on my Facebook page. I'm going to share them. You can look at them. The link is down below in the comments.
I wonder what did, it's one of those, did they sleep there? Did they work there type of thing?
I think whoever purchased, you can read about this, whoever purchased the Mizpah Hotel in the 90s, because it was getting run down, pretty dilapidated. They needed to revive it, throw some money into it as an investment. I believe whoever it is a collector of these canceled checks, and he just put them up on display. So you can see him now.
I wonder if he's got one from Elvis Graceland one.
He has no Elvis one Graceland.
Wow. You never know, though. Maybe he's hiding it, waiting for you to come back and dig it out.
But I went through all the old buildings, walked the town. The second to last day there, I was bored. I ran out of everything to do, so I got on YouTube. Found this video of a guy who was explaining what to do in Tonopah.
Oh, wow.
He's driving through. He says, you go down to this road, which I can't remember the name of it. It was Adams Street or something.
Yeah.
He goes, bottle collectors, go down that road because that is where the garbage dump is for the town for the last 100 years.
Oh, my God.
Okay, wow. All right. So this is middle of day, middle of week, Wednesday. There's no tourist around. I'm driving about a half mile down this old gravel dirt road, and you can see where the terrain changes. You can see all this broken glass, broken, everything is broken.
Wow.
Drive about another quarter mile or half mile. You're getting into the end area, broken glass everywhere. So I decide I'm just going to start walking the grounds. I don't have a shovel or anything and see what I can find. There's a lot of broken plates and a lot of fine china. It's like, why did you people break this? I did find a plate that had the old Mizpah Hotel logo on it.
Oh, nice.
But it wasn't worth anything. So after walking around for about 2 hours, I came across these little, what looked like the little half pint whiskey bottles. Picked up those. They were dirty. I couldn't really read or anything what's on them. But it's like, hey, I have found something that is in one whole piece, not broken and shattered.
Nice. Nice.
I also found some masonry. I think I found 3 old masonry jars.
Oh, nice. That's another past that's coming light again. In other words, it's nostalgic because everybody likes to drink out of the mason jars, moonshine, good stuff.
I'm walking through a garbage dump here that's 117 years old, basically, okay? I grabbed the 3 masonry jars. I was just happy to have them. Okay, it's starting to get sunset kind of time. Throw them in my car, take them. I wait till I get back, till I can wash them off and look at them, okay? So the little glass bottles that I found, it says on them, I can't remember the expression. It goes, Federal Reserved Rights for Selling the Alcohol.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I'm getting the statement wrong because I didn't write it down. I didn't know how deep we're in this conversation.
That's pretty...
It's 1933. It's a full bottle. 1933 Prohibition bottle.
Nice. Wow.
Those are the valuable ones. It's worth like maybe $15-$20. I don't care. It's worth something to me.
Well, that's it. It's something you did and the history and the ambiance of who had it.
The ambiance, exactly.
Where was it? You know, where did they bring it in from?
Yeah.
And just the whole thing.
Now, masonry jars, their history is long and wide. It's a lot of clues you got to figure out. But one was still shut. It had a lid on it. The other two did not. I washed them all off. One jar has like this, it's about the size of maybe your thumb, has this goober, I want to call it. This reddish-hued goober down in the bottom of it. The other jar, which I tried to get the lid off, I wasn't going to force it because I didn't want to break it. It's got some little speckles of rock and another goober, okay? They're kind of reddish in color. So I started reading up on it. The way they would test for silver back in the day, whatever the element was that you had, you would dump some acid on it. If it turned reddish, blood red colored, then it was a little bit of silver content.
Wow.
So a glass jar, you pour acid into it, it's not going to melt it or make it go away. What I got here is some 117-year-old jars that probably some 49er took, put that little element of rock or whatever it was that he had down there, put the acid in it, And it was to test it for silver.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. That's history.
That's a piece of history right there.
That's really neat. Especially being a nerd, being like, wow, I got something that they tested to test for silver and stuff.
Exactly.
That's what you call being a true nerd.
And it's so limited edition type thing. So eventually, I mean, I'm not...
Did any aliens get you on the way? Did you see any sightings or anything?
Well, do you have a rock story?
Besides in my head, okay. I'm trying to see. Only thing is with me is when I was a kid, you know, it's like you always heard about this great find like you like to get, like from the comet, the meteorite.
Halley's Comet?
Yeah, you know, like the meteorites, the fragments and stuff like that. So I grew up in, suburbs, New Jersey and stuff, so... You know, you dug in your backyard and, you know, you found something. You're like, oh, my gosh, this is like an arrowhead. You know what I mean? Or you found, like, a brick. Ooh, what was this from? You know what I'm saying?
That was fun to do.
You know, different stuff like that. So once in a while, you found a little something, and then you made your own kind of rock story up and be like, hey, you know where this came from? Because your kid, your imagination and stuff like that. But really, I wasn't a big rock fan back then.
When you're a kid and you're doing that kind of exploration... It's 40 years later that you actually come to seclusion and comes around full circle. I got that rock with silver now.
Well, that's
it's mine,
it.
You know.
It's like when they dug up our old fence and stuff, there was a railroad spike.
Really?
Yeah, so my grandfather reused it to put in the new fence. But it's just like, you don't know where that come from. Who was it? Was there like treasures hidden in the yard now? You're thinking all this stuff when you're a kid.
It was here before you.
Yes.
It's going to be here after you.
Exactly.
You
but you're when that kid, you're like, ooh, what's that buried treasure?
Yeah.
Because you see like a show on at night, you're like, oh my gosh, pirate. You know, like Long John Silver or Blackbeard or something. You see a show, the next day you're like, huh. Well, you see something not right. Oh, you and your friends, it's a treasure map.
Yeah.
Let's go rock hunting or let's
like,
go
like
look.
Like they didn't Stand By Me.
Exactly.
You ever seen a dead body? Let's go look at a dead body, you know, that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, that's just suburban life, I guess, as a growing up.
Well, I mean, you get in talk. I've never had an alien encounter or UFO, but we live near Area 51.
And we drove by there. And
yeah.
The bizarre part is
we drove near the territory that occupies said area.
Yes, but we also drove by, there's a, how do you want to say, a
cat house. Yep.
Named Mabel's.
No.
Wasn't it Mabel's?
No, it wasn't Mabel's. It was the Area 51 cat house.
Oh, okay. You know? I don't know. I thought it had something to do with our...
Here's what I do know. That if you go near the closest town that you can get to near Area 51 is a town called Rachel.
Okay.
From what I understand, I've looked at a few videos, there used to be a cafe, a museum, a few little
things.
What
happened to it?
It's closed down from what I understand.
Why?
But who knows? But it's something you don't want to mess. You see people who will go up to this property line at Area 51 and the camos, the guard dudes are looking down on you. From what I've heard, you don't want to do that.
No. Because they fly the stealth bomber here.
Yeah.
And they have all kinds of weird, undescribed technology that... It's almost unheard of.
You don't want to.
No.
Don't tempt the fates, okay?
No, exactly.
As much fun as it would be to go up there and just like,
it's not that fun if you have a couple black Cadillac Mercedes.
Yeah, just a couple helicopters following you.
Yeah, and those type people will not let up. So you're better off just avoiding it.
Just don't do it.
Just like...
go look for silver.
Yeah, or souvenirs or like... Yeah. Who knows? Maybe E.T. will come down and get you a crazy thing in the desert. Well, that's what the desert is. There's all kinds of stories, movies. I mean...
Mystery stuff
look
in
at,
the desert.
Discovered Henderson.
Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes. I'm sorry. So anyway, Howard Hughes was here, and he has bizarre stories. There's something about his movie that he actually was picked up hitchhiking.
Yeah.
And it's just bizarre.
That is...
In the desert. This guy was goofy.
I've heard of that story. And
he was a billionaire, and he just... Flaked out, went into the desert.
Well, you know,
at night.
The plane that he made, the Spruce Goose.
Yes.
It's in a museum up in McMinnville, Oregon. You can actually go take a tour of the plane, and they will let you sit in the driver's seat of the Spruce Goose.
Now, you see that now?
Talk about a piece of history.
Yeah, which was so overspent. They said he spent more money than what it was ever going to make.
Yeah.
But he proved the point.
I've watched the films of the thing as they test flew it the first time. There's the picture of him sitting right there. It is so cool because you can sit in. They give you a hat to put on. Looks like you. They'll take your pitch. It's all for best $50 you can spend. But it's just so cool because then it's like you look at the controls. It's like I'm touching where Howard Hughes touched. You know,
you feel like an aviator. You know, like you're actually there. This is what the desert does.
This is one of these nerd things that is fun to do. You know, I mean, what the next topic that leads into desert life? Where do you put that at?
Just like I said, Howard Hughes going into the desert at night, a billionaire, has hotels, all kinds of properties, but yet he's hitchhiking.
Yeah.
Why? What is the crazy pull the desert has for people, especially coming, you're from Oregon, you're from suburbia where there's, you know, water and green. I'm from the East Coast, the same thing.
Toxic waste and water.
Yeah, but what brings you down to this desert where there's supposed to be buried bodies from the mob.
Yeah.
You're supposed to have crazy stories of like Howard Hughes.
Yeah.
There's supposed to be, you see the movies and stuff like Quentin Tarantino about these crazy people that if you get caught camping out, they're going to terrorize you with bikes and all kinds of crazy shit.
Driving in the desert can put you in a mood. If you're going, example, if you're going south to Los Angeles, pretty good short trip, all right? But if you're driving to Reno, Nevada, you take someone with you and be ready to have lots of comfort food with you.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Because what are you running into?
There's nothing out there.
No, but there is. It's like this euphoric calling.
Yeah. There's
something that calls you out there to be like, okay, like I said, these crazy stories of people kidnapping people and wind up stuff. It's got to come from somewhere. It's just not imagination.
I mean, I'd like to go to Tonopah because it's just halfway and then I can turn around and come back. Because the drive on that road, we took that one trip.
Yeah.
We got about 90 miles, but then the wind knocked some trucks over through
that
last stretch.
Shut down.
Turn around and go back.
The whole thing was shut down, but it's desert life.
Yeah.
I mean, you wonder how can a plant, you know, like a cactus, thrive in 100 degree, 115 degree heat, but yet minus 40 below, and it can provide you water.
Yeah.
And it's got all the prickly things on it. And then you like those, what were they called? You were showing me yucca something, those plants, remember we were looking at on the way back?
Eucalyptus? No, the Joshua trees.
Yes, the Joshua trees. I mean, you have so much different life.
Yep.
Then you have like, what is the vegetation like? What is the animal life like? What kind of crazy stuff really went on here with the cowboys and the Indians? That's what I love about some of these passes. Not just how do the cars get through, you know, in the dark. How did these wagon trains go over mountains?
Oh, yeah, the borax miners.
Oh, my gosh.
You know?
How? I mean, that's the euphoric about living here. We live in a casino zone now, national or international entertainment zone. But still, look when you go out.
By desert on all sides, you know.
And it's just amazing. And they keep building and building. The more, you know, land they have, the more, quote unquote, you know, how do you want to say, the ritzier you can live. Oh, you can live on a golf course and see this, see the strip. But when you go past all that, what is it? Just desert. But what is the pull that makes us as humans just want to be here? It's like, is there a little alien out there? Is it the Indians? Is it the history of, you know, like the miners?
There's something to nerd out there for everybody.
Yeah,
you know?
and even another thing is if you like snakes, people go, I was going to say rock hunting. They go snake hunting.
Yeah.
In boulders. Two boulders. You say, ask people, what are you doing there? Oh, I'm looking for a rattlesnake. You're like, wow.
Whoa, okay.
I mean, there's a lot of different stuff here. Like you say, the nerd out.
There's a lot of wildlife. People don't realize, but it's so well camouflaged.
Yeah, and then you got the UFO angle. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
To the UFO angle.
I do want to make a trip to Roswell. I just want to go see what it's about. I hear the stories. I've seen the videos. Well, now I want to go and be boots on the ground and visit to where said thing happened.
Well, it's just like us here. We can take a drive anytime and just go out and pick up rocks. You can go, like I said, climbing like you like to do. You can go to Red Rock. There's just so much natural beauty besides casinos here. But you can't get caught up in the element, which is a hot day or a cold night. You got to do it in between. I've never camped. Now, camping has got to be a really neat thing out in the desert at night. Just something different.
I've kind of camped out in the desert, but it was in the back of a truck.
Okay, but still, at least you did something.
I wasn't sleeping on the ground.
Sleeping on the ground, looking at the stars, hearing noises, hearing coyotes, hearing like this, scorpions. Come on, you know what I'm saying? So much different stuff goes through your head. It's like, oh my gosh, am I going to sit on an anthill?
It's again, more than just the Roadrunner and the coyote.
Exactly. So that's what they offer here in Nevada. Our land, maybe you don't have the most money, but we have so much our creative mind can just...
So limitless. In conclusion, if there's something you're coming to Vegas for, remember, there's more than just gambling and...
Partying.
There's a lot outside that comes about in our community.
Just amazing, Nevada.
That's our Nerdling podcast, but we said we were going to start injecting, I like this idea you came up with, we're going to start injecting a Michael Jackson uniquity into the podcast.
You know why you got to do Michael Jackson? Because Michael Jackson is one of the most incredible, iconic people that you're never going to get to meet, but his music will last dozens and dozens and dozens and generations.
For sure.
And I don't think nobody will never not know who Michael Jackson is or heard his one of his songs.
For sure. So the one I picked the song Say.
Oh.
The duet with Paul McCartney. Play what you remember always as what's the 1983 version, okay? Okay, so that's the version you pretty much are familiar with growing up in your youth. Paul McCartney starts the song.
But let me guess, some kind of crazy way, getting back to Mabel's Doomsday Archive Vault, you pulled out something unique.
Well, actually, it was Paul McCartney in 2015. I didn't know this. I heard about it, but I didn't listen to it because I didn't. Just 2015, for a bonus track of his Pipes of Peace album, which is where the song came from, they basically took the song and switched the vocals.
Wow.
So Michael Jackson is just singing the Paul start and stop, and they just switched it. So here it is. This was the 2015 remix for the version of Say.
Leave.
All right, so what do you think of that, the changing of the vocals, switching it up? Michael Jackson
how
starts it.
How can you say? Just say. Nothing to say.
Oh, there's plenty to say.
Iconic. I mean, if you're a true Michael Jackson fan, you hear something like that, just puts you out in a zone of why did he die so young.
But I got a nerdling first for you.
Let's hear the nerdling first on the podcast.
Okay, so the original, 1983, you have this. You have Paul McCartney starts the vocals, okay? You have this 2015 with Michael Jackson starts the vocals, okay? Why not take the two songs and play them together over each other?
Why not?
Curiosity got the best of me. Nobody else, I could not find anywhere in Google, any of the
searches. So this is being brought to you live.
This is a
first ever in the world you're hearing this, live
first
from
time
the
you,
podcast.
First time you've ever podcast. Heard this, okay? I basically took the 83 vinyl 45 version, took the audio track from the 2015, put them together, and let's just play it because you're going to be amazed, okay? Now, I'm going to say this, okay? At the very beginning, it sounds a little bit crunchy, kind of. Doesn't really match up. I left it that way because I'm leaving that as kind of my fingerprint on it, where if somebody takes it and takes
you'll
it over
know
some,
what it is.
I'll know, hey,
going.
Hey.
It.
I did that MP3 first,
that's
not
it.
You.
Not you.
So here we go. Let me dig it out. All right, there you have it. World premiere podcast of taking both versions, 83, 2015 of Say, 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 and running them together.
You know what that reminds me of? Like riding on the Silver Bullet train,
yeah.
Old school train locomotive with a fast, what do they call it?
Old locomotive with a bullet train engine.
Yes, exactly, with a bullet train engine, and it just keeps going. But you hit the sweet spot, and then you just pick up. You got like 100 miles, and yeah. You're there. You got that cruising altitude. You know, you just go.
Go for
slow,
it.
Slow, get into the station, and cruise. I love that.
So anyway, we'll throw it up some kind of comments or something. That's your Michael Jackson's Uniquities of this week. And this has been the Nerdlings Podcast.
Have a good evening. For the purpose, the critique, shit.